As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara. Whoa. And I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Was that you or me?
That was you.
So I think I was trying to turn it down. You're really loud there. That's on me. All right, here we go, folks.
All right.
I can't think of anything more rewarding than being able to express yourself to others through painting. Who do you think said that?
Bob Ross.
Yeah. Yes. Kind of the master of like the nice quote, right? The nice, right. like sweet quote.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, any number of artists could have said something like that, any number of painters, but for someone to be like quoted saying that,
Right, you're trying to say, yeah.
You're like, who was that? And they're like, well, that seems like something that like Bob Ross would say. So, yeah.
Right, yeah, you know, anyone, probably every artist has said that once or something like that, right? But it's...
Yeah, exactly. To find a way to be able to express yourself through paint is a right. Special thing to be able to do. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I was watching this Bob Ross documentary on Netflix, but it's like kind of... It's kind of like a dark one. It's something greed, blah, blah, blah. It's about how his business partners kind of screw him over, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I watched it too.
Yeah. And it was, yeah. I have mixed feelings on it.
Right, okay.
I enjoy Bob Ross, and I think everyone likes him for his personality, right? The softness, the welcome. It's like, it's such an escape watching him.
Right.
And yeah. to dig into the dark side of stuff always, I mean, it's entertaining, but it's a little like, I don't have to know all this. I mean, I want to know if his like business partner screwed him over. Cause then you can be like, yeah, I'm not going to buy this or this. I don't want to buy any Bob Ross stuff. Cause maybe they own it, you know, and his family doesn't get any of it. Right.
Right. Yeah.
Not that I would necessarily buy, you know, Bob Ross acrylic or yeah. whatever, but yeah, right. you know, you kind of want to know, but
oil paint.
And they're digging into like his sex life and blah blah blah. It's like, yeah, Bob Ross liked to have sex. He has a son. We know he liked to have. He's a man. Like,
yeah, right. Exactly. What do you expect? Yeah.
Well, maybe he had sex with other people. Yeah, a lot of people have sex with other people. Like, it's like, why yeah. do I want to dig in? I'm not going to judge him off of.
him right. Liking. Exactly.
And that's not his. It's like, yeah. It's like, why do we have to go into that?
Yeah, actually, though, I mean, I think in the grand scheme of how they presented him as a person, he wasn't really, like, defaced at all in that.
That's true. And
I mean, yeah, like, there's the possibility that maybe he had an affair with the woman who was his business partner, like, one time. But, like, even that, like, it was, like, the 70s and 80s. Like,
right.
It was crazy back then, you know. It was a weird time. But I like the fact that, like, they talked about that he did, like, he was very charismatic, and he liked to flirt with him. And I like to flirt with women. Like, I'm a married man, happily married. But I'm, you know, I do it in a way that's fun, right? I want to make women feel good about themselves. So I'm like, I say, what's up? And I give him five, and I kind of, you know, I joke with him. That's all part of that kind of charisma. But I like the fact that they like play that up in the show. They like he had his like whisper.
Yeah,
voice.
But it was like it was almost yeah, I don't know, but it was almost like they were digging at him a little bit, even though the main thing wasn't against him, because they did, like, it was always he was a great guy, everyone knew him, loved him, blah 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 blah. But anyway.
Yeah. No, I thought it was good. And I thought it actually humanized him some, because he's just this kind of like mountain of a painter that people see on TV, and they're always like, oh my gosh, I can't believe, like, how can someone do that in such a short amount of time? And, you know, he had a system. It was like, it's like, I don't know, like doing chainmail. You know, it's a system, right? It's like a pattern, and he does the same thing over and over again. He has like a way to do things. And because he has that and he built up the system, he can rearrange that system to fit any pattern and just put it into a landscape. Now, obviously, he's coming up with these landscapes, and not right on the spot. He would always paint one beforehand,
right?
And he'd have that painting with him in the studio, and he'd reference that as the reference for the painting,
right?
So he'd always have one that he did beforehand, and then he'd do it. So, you know, it was like, but I liked the fact that it kind of humanized him, and it made, like, it kind of talked about the history behind what happened and like how the channel started and how the the show started and his ideas behind different things and how he changed his persona to be like more, you know, specifically his audience was women. So he's like, let's pull the more audience, like, you know, we're doing a show for an audience. And
right, maybe it's just my personal taste and what I wanted from a Bob Ross documentary, right?
You wanted Bob Ross episode in a Bob Ross documentary.
I feel like there's so much of him, like interesting things I would feel about him without having to dig into all the other stuff. But that's what they were going for, and it was cool to see. And like you said, I was going to ask you as a painter about Bob Ross, but I think that style, it's the seed of easy painting, like paint nights that are now have been popular or were before the
sip
pandemic.
And paint. Yeah, right.
It's something you can do simple. And I don't think it's a cheap art form, because he has tricks to making paint look like life. And that's what a lot of great fine art is. It's tricks to make paint look like life or architecture or trees. It's just a different way to do it. So it might not be fine art, but it has just as much value, in my opinion. And because Bob Ross sold himself, like a lot of big artists do anyway.
Right, yeah.
He's doing the same thing. And, I mean, he made plenty of money, and, you know, he can do something in 30 minutes that someone might not be able to do.
Yeah, and his goal wasn't to be a great artist. His goal was to inspire people to paint and to say, like, you can do it. Like, you are, like, good enough to do this. Try it, and look how easy it can be with these few little techniques, right? You just do a little, like, fan brush left and right, and you can make a pine tree. If you take a palette knife and you scrape it down, you know, some light paint over dark paint, and you kind of let it scrape, it's going to create texture. Like, I do all that stuff in my paintings, but I'm doing it in a way where I'm you know, as a landscape painter, I would paint from life predominantly. That's what I prefer to do. Like, if I'm going to do a painting in the studio, it's going to be, I'm going to push it to like either not like completely imaginary, but I'm going to push different elements of it. That's going to push it outside of the realm of just observational artwork. And it's going to be something else, you know? So I think that's where, like, he was basically giving a whole, like, generation of people the keys to the car to go out and have fun and paint and be inspired. You know, and just, like, do what you want to do. And that's what his goal was to inspire and teach. It wasn't to be a famous artist like that. I mean, I'm sure he enjoyed the fame. But I know that, like, at least I know per the documentary, like, he was a little surprised, right? Like, how the fame built with him,
right?
You know, which is good. I think you go into something with an honest desire, and then the outcome or the, like, trickle down effect of that of that desire, if it's a pleasant trickle down effect, that's great, you know? Mm-hmm. And obviously, as his fame grew, and there's, you know, different people like maybe try to take advantage of him and take advantage of the money and whatnot. But, you know, they were also pushing him to do better things and try different things, and maybe giving him that guidance that made him have a wider network. You know, he could cast a wider net to inspire more people. Right. So like, he wasn't trying to make fine art paintings that were going to go in a museum. He was trying to show other people with his painting how you can do it easily and quickly and be satisfied and create something that looks good, so then you want to work again and again and again. Mm-hmm. 'Cause the worst thing about trying to do something as an artist is failing and then not having the confidence to try it again, you know, or as a student of anything, you know, like you go in the first time, you just don't do well. That's hard to try again. You know, it's like riding a horse. It's hard to get back on when the horse kicks you off because it hurts.
Right.
So he helped people do their firsts or whatever, get into painting in a way that they could make something that looked nice, like the sip and paints, right? You're like, oh, look what I did. Like, this looks cool. Right. I want to try it again. I'll buy Bob Ross paints.
Yeah. And the value of it is the value to yourself. So that's just like any paint. That's like any artwork people like. There's a moment when you can scoff at maybe something someone likes, whether it's a type of painting or a type of movie or you know, a type of music. But there's only so much. We all go, well, you know, that's what you like. It's
Exactly. You have your opinion, you know.
I was listening to, I forget what podcast. They were talking to a whiskey maker and asking, look, how should I drink it? Because a lot of people, you know, if you put ice in your whiskey, they'll make fun of you or, you know, something like that.
Right.
And he's like, drink it to your taste. If you want ice in your whiskey, don't let anyone tell you that you shouldn't put ice in your whiskey. Like,
you're there to enjoy it. Like, you're paying the money for it.
That's to your taste. And a lot of these things that people scoff at are just, they're fads in themselves. They're a few people wrote a few articles about saying, this isn't how it should be done. And then everyone else goes, oh, okay. And they just listen along. And then when they hear someone else bring up the same exact opinion they had maybe a year ago, then they scoff at them for having that opinion.
Right.
Because they're not in the know. Even though a year ago you thought the exact same thing, but oh, you're not in the know.
And that's then, last year. Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, I thought like that once. I was stupid. You know, it's...
Yeah, I used to be stupid too.
Now I know. Yeah. So, but yeah, he had a great technique and personality, and we all watched it because it was on PBS, and the whole country knows it, and everyone has watched it, and it's been on for so long. Yeah, I didn't necessarily want to go on a Bob Ross kick, but I like, you know, all his quotes are good and just something like that. Finding something to where you can express yourself to others in some type of art form is a great thing. And that is anything you do creatively.
Right. Yeah. And I think you used Adam Savage's quote or a part of his quote about being a maker, what it is to be a maker. Mm-hmm. And I've showed my students that video because it's really good. It's like, As a teacher, when you can teach or guide a student to do something, but then when they do it right, you can see how much that success means to them. Mm-hmm. You know, like they do something and it clicks, and they do something, I would say, right, quote unquote, right. You know, because in art, there's a difference between right and wrong. But if I'm teaching a student to do, like, you know, 1-point perspective, and they're like, can't really get it, and then they get it. Right. And then they can do 5, 6, 7, 10 lines on their own and it works perfectly. Right. You can see it in their expression and how they speed up and how they really feel confident that they know they can express themselves through this imagery. And that's a cool experience for all people to have that feeling, to be able to I've done this thing and now I'm expressing it to other people and I get it.
It's like the original, the first time when you learn how to draw an apple or a round object.
Right, yeah.
You need those techniques. There is a right way to make it look three-dimensional.
Right.
And you have to know those techniques or tricks or whatever to figure it out. So someone will teach you the quote-unquote right way to do it. And then once you know that, you're confident going forward, and then you can change things up like any art form.
Right. Yeah, I think that's like those that's the early stages of the maker switch. Like, as soon as you learn a trick and you can do that trick, if it's in art or if it's in math or if it's in anything, And then you're like, oh, look at this trick. You like show someone else. Look what I can do. Like, look what I can make. It's like, right. I always think about the little dog drawing that you would draw, like the little line. And it's like the kind of hound, the slouchy hound dog with the mouth right. and thing. You know, it's like yeah. once you know how to do that and then you like show other people like, look at this cool thing I can do, you know, that opens up that kind of joy in you. And I think that's an idea of the maker switch. Like you've switched that maker switch on and it's hard to switch it back off. You're like, oh, what else can I make?
Right. Because a lot of people turn that off before they even get started.
Right.
Or yeah. they don't even try. I can't do that. And a small example, right. it's yeah, not exactly. even really a guy. Well, my brother-in-law, mm-hmm. he, we were getting ready for my daughter's first birthday party. And we were blowing up balloons and he's like, I'll blow them up. You tie them. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm not good at tying them. And I saw him do it. He was wrapping it around one finger and trying to do it. And then it was just saying, oh, there's a trick. You know, you just do two, wrap it around and go through like that. Yeah. He's like, oh, he's like, how after 30 some years, I didn't know that. But yeah, right. it's someone who it, that happens to all of us. You just go, I don't know that. I can't, right. I don't do that. Or I can't do that. And it's like, then someone comes along and just goes, oh no, no, look here, just do it this way. And it, oh,
like, yeah. Okay. Someone gives you the trick, right? Someone right. teaches you right. or, and that's the thing too. Like there are probably other people who tried to teach him, like his mom or, you know, like other people who he might have just had like it turned off toward. Like, yeah, whatever. I don't really care, you know. But then you come along and you're like, he's helping you out and he wants to help, you know. And so you're just like, oh, here, let me show you real quick a trick. And then yeah. he's like, he's open to that, right? Because it's someone else and he wants to help, you know, so he doesn't want to feel like he can't help. So he's like, all right, let me see what you got. And then it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, now I know the trick. Now all of a sudden, like, the world of balloons is open to him. right. He's going to be a balloon.
He can be a clown balloon. Now.
Yeah, right, exactly.
What have I done?
It's funny. We kind of getting into what we've been up to. My wife and daughter and I went to an archery range that we hadn't been to before on Sunday last weekend. And we took a class with one of the archers there that's part of the SCA, Society of Creative Anachronisms. Oh. And they do, like, events and stuff at this range. It's the Baltimore Bowman. Dev, you know that on Harford Road? Like,
yes.
If we're going
yes.
down yep. to the Seven Sisters, it's got that sign mm-hmm. that hangs there with the little yeah, archer yeah. on it. Like, yeah. I've seen it. It's, like, that place has been there my entire life.
Right.
Like, I remember being a kid driving by and be like, cool, it's like Robin Hood on that sign. Never gone in there because I always assumed it was, like, a private archery club, but it's actually like an equestrian center, so it's got horses and stuff. And then if you drive down the back to this like kind of a dirt road that goes to the back, there's a whole archery center in the back. So we went and took a class. There were three other people that were there along with Nicole and Corinne and myself, and he was giving us pointers on form and stuff and talking to Nicole and talking to Corinne, and at the end he was like, you know, he said specifically about Corinne, like she's strong, she's got, you know, she's good. She has decent form. You know, there are things that she needs to work on, but she might need to work on that with somebody other than you two, right? Because she can hear it from you, but she's not hearing it, you know?
Right.
Like, you need someone else who's just someone else who's not associated, right? It's not her parents. It's like another person who's an archer. And they do like all sorts of free classes and stuff. And you can kind of just set up through the email, like, this person's going to be here on Saturday. If you want to come, and they'll show you some pointers, right? It's pretty much open. And there's yeah. There's like a yearly family rate. It's like $40 a year or something to be a member.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, then you can go anytime. You get the, like, there's a combination on the gate. So there are days that are open to the public, and then there are days that are open just to like the members. So, but it was cool. It was really fun. And, but that, it was that thing, right? It was like, she was listening to him trying to do what he was saying, but like actually trying as opposed to listening, but then just being like, yeah, I'm having fun. Like, let me just do my thing, you know?
Right.
Because she was like open to hear it from someone else.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
It's like when you're a kid and your parents give you advice. Mm-hmm. You don't really take it as advice. You take it as another rule, right? Just to like,
right, yeah.
Hey, put your helmet on. And then there's also like, hey, drive carefully, or don't treat someone like this, or hey, you just feel like it's another, yeah,
it's another nag or something,
right?
You
know, yeah,
like, all right,
yeah,
yeah.
No, yeah, that's
cool. You get older and you're like, oh, that was actually all like, I'm not, your parents are like, I'm not just telling this to you for the fun of it, like, I'm trying to give you something that, you know, I'm not, it's not just for fun, just for me to give you rules,
right? That's nice. Yeah, I got to go down there. That's cool.
It was awesome. It was really cool. They had, like, they have two 3D courses in the woods that you can go through that are, like, set up. Kind of like the one at Oregon Ridge.
Yeah.
I didn't actually see him, but he told me where they were. And then they have a whole bunch of, I guess they're just called Pels, which are just, like, targets at the end of a range. So they have a range, and then there's, like, seven or eight targets that are spaced out, you know, 15 feet apart. And then you can kind of shoot, you know, from one end of the range down range. So it was pretty cool. And we had some, he had some 3D targets. So, you know, shapes of animals. There was like a pig, like a warthog, and a bear, and a ram. And we were, and then also these little, like 1 foot tall minion type characters that he had. And they were cool. They were like, you know, like stuff probably 8 inches in diameter and a foot tall, you know? So kind of just these tall, skinny things, almost like bowling pins. And we were aiming at those, shooting them and stuff. But yeah, it was fun. They were, it was cool. They were really heavy. Like you could shoot them, they wouldn't fall over. I was like, huh, must be really dense, you know, full of, one of the things that, I've used, or I've seen people use, is shopping bags. You get like tons of plastic shopping bags and you just jam a target full and it gives you that density in it. So I think that might've been what it was, but I'm not sure.
It's a good way to recycle it.
Yeah. But it was cool. It was good. It was good to like hear some like a lot of what he was saying was because it was kind of an entry level class. It was kind of to figure out where we were and to kind of give us pointers and also just the safety of using that area because you have to take their kind of safety intro course to be able to become a member and then use the ranges.
Right.
But it's free. You just have to sign up and go and do it. You know, it's like 2 hours on a Sunday. But it was a beautiful day for it. But it was fun. It was fun to like get some pointers and hear him talking about form and the different things and. And gave us like a different way to shoot distance. So instead of like, you know, aiming up, instead of like tilting your shoulders, he said always like tilt from the waist. Right. So then you have like your form and then you're tilting at your hips instead of tilting from your shoulders, you know, like to get that distance.
Yeah.
So you still have the same form across your chest and arms. So I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah.
So that's great. Yeah, right. Pointers. Like we said before, you need someone to give you those tricks and
right. Yeah.
And it's even if we have natural talent or you have natural talent in something, there's always someone who can help you funnel it, right? Funnel it correctly. Yeah. Like, hey, yeah, you've got it, but do this, funnel it, and make it more consistent.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, right. And just, yeah, like you said, those tricks are good to hear sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
And I've never taken a class or anything for archery. I've just, you know, liked archery as a kid and then started making bows and then, you know, just have shot a lot. So,
right.
You know, I've obviously watched a ton of YouTube videos and watched some things on how to be, you know, how to shoot better and more accurately. And I've seen people talk about form and stuff. I've never had a class with anyone. So, you know, everything that I do is based off of just my own experience and then also tips that I picked up from people online. So, but it was good to have someone one-on-one. It's fun.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll have to check it out. I've been working on we're gonna move, so I am surrounded by boxes right now.
Nice.
But that's
do you have a move date yet?
Possible.
I know you said you have to be, it was like November or something is the hard cutoff date.
Well, we're trying to close by the end of this month.
Right on.
So awesome. Next week.
Cool.
That's the aim. So we've been packing and it's exciting. Yeah, I don't know. We didn't start moving yet, but we have a lot of stuff, and we gotta get ready and figure out how we're gonna do it all. But it's exciting. It's nice. It'll be nice to have a little area to ourselves, and yeah, stop paying for rent for now. It'd be nice.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Put money towards something that you can get it back eventually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, right on.
So that's exciting, and we put out the video, which is nice.
Yeah, yep, that went out finally. Today. Yep,
that's something different and cool. And Nebula really hooked us up with the projector, and we've talked about it, and that was really nice. And they trusted us, so hopefully, you know, you guys go and watch it and get some views on it, and hopefully they sell some things. And we have our first
affiliate
link is to that. Yeah. So if you guys are looking for a projector, it's nice. It's sweet. It's 4K HDR. Really nice speakers on it. I'm sure if you want to use it for home theater, you'll still set up some type of
sound system or something.
Sound system.
Yeah. Right.
But if you do want to take it outside like we did, and if you do just want to pull it out for like football or something, having people over and you can shoot it against the wall, it's got plenty loud. Like we were outside and we had it bumping. You were sitting next to it. It's great. It's got good bass. It's just good sound all around.
It does. For such a small like system with small speakers, it did sound really good. It's got like the speakers are facing all directions, so you really do get that kind of full sound.
Right. Yeah, so nice. If you sat it down on your coffee table and shot it at an empty wall, it would fill up a room. It would be great for like sports and stuff, even movies if you're not too worried about
getting a ton of bass or a ton
where the audio is coming from. You might be sitting next to it. So it's nice. We got some codes on the video if you guys are interested. I think they give the standard coupon they give out to some people are like $200 off. So it's pretty expensive, but I think that brings it down to like $1,400.
Yeah, for the 4K version.
For the 4K version.
I think it's an extra $50 on top of that if you use the specific link that we have on the video. Here, I'll double check. I'll let everyone know right now. So, yeah, if you are looking for a projector and you're looking for a decent one, this is a really good projector. The discount code gets you $50. $50 is the code plus the $200 coupon. So a total of $250. Now these codes are specifically for, they go until the 24th. So it's kind of the 4K one only goes to the 24th. The 1080p one goes until the 26th. So they're kind of quick for the coupon for, you know, getting the discount. It's a quick turnaround, but if you do end up getting it later, like we'll have affiliate links, so if you are looking for a nice projector, you know, check it out. You could probably still get the coupon even if it's later, but you know, you will also get some money from that, some kickback, because if you're clicking from our video, you're using our affiliate link.
Yeah, so
we'll get some of that, which is nice.
Yeah, if you're
in the market
for it, you can check it out. It's sweet, and you can set up we had a 150-inch screen. We could probably go a little bigger. I pulled it back farther, and it didn't lose much quality. So it'll definitely fill up a whole wall in your house, for sure.
Yeah. Devin did a kick-ass job painting it. Looks awesome. Doing, like, the decals of the film reels on the side and spraying that. They looked really nice and, you know, worked out well. Doing decals well sometimes is tricky. And obviously, if you're having like a sticky decal, I think was what you had, which works well. But you know, it can be tricky. I think you did a really good job. Looks Thanks. Awesome.
Yeah. I don't know. Did I talk about it? Yeah. I just took the Cricut.
The Cricut. That
my wife has. Oh yeah, we did talk about that. And I just took some online images and made them into silhouettes and used that. And it was it worked nice. And we sprayed it and. It's pretty cool, pretty sweet looking, and it's ready to be used. I want to use it hopefully when we move to the new place. We'll set up something and have a couple nights before it gets too cold, maybe some football, maybe like a couple movies, and then take it inside.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. I wonder, I think you said you talked about making like a frame for it. You say PVC, is that what you said originally? Like possibly using PVC?
A lot of people use PVC.
I feel like PVC would be too flexible though, like to get a good hold. You could probably use like black pipe and it would be just as cheap. I think black pipe's pretty cheap. You can get like 10-foot sections for $10, $15 or something.
Yeah, a couple people I saw, they had PVC, and there's a center PVC beam across the middle, long-wise.
Like
That's a little tricky, too, though, because then you have
a thing behind it.
Yeah, you have a thing behind it, and a pretty thin, a thin, stretchy fabric. You'd have to probably put, like, a tarp, some type of black tarp behind it. That's a lot, and that's what I might do.
So you, like, wrap it and then put it on top of that,
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking like if you did it with black pipe, then it would be plenty rigid and it's heavy enough too that it's going to like support its own weight even with like a little bit of wind. And black pipe comes with all the connectors, like the corner connectors and T braces and, you know, four ways and stuff, so it gives you a bunch of options. Yeah, maybe we'll maybe we'll do a video about it.
Yeah, either that
an outdoor
or
screen. That'd be cool.
Or
really simple.
Well, I'd probably do that, or just paint the side of one of the sheds.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah,
white and see how it goes.
Just put up. Yeah, right. Yeah, clean out a spot to have like a nice seating area.
Yeah, just paint the shed, and then it'll be away from the house, and you can watch movies all night. And then, but anyway, so yeah, it's cool that video is finally out. We had some issues getting it out, but it's out now, which is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, and it turned out really good. I was really happy with it. Like, the pacing was good. I like the way you kind of got the feeling of, like, there being a lot of cuts with the circular saw blade, but not, like, spending a lot of time filming. You know, like, multiple, like, jump. You know, like, okay, yeah, it took a lot to cut out all these little pieces. But then the speed of, like, putting those together with the pneumatic nail gun and the glue, like, it works so well. It's like, so quick. You know, it was like,
yeah,
we spent, like, a decent amount of time figuring everything out and then cutting all the wood. And then, like, the assembly was nothing. You know, it was like,
right,
everything went together.
Really right. Quick, it's hard to figure out where you want to spend the time on that.
Right.
Because making a box is mainly the figuring and cutting it out properly, right? The nailing and screwing together and gluing, it's not that. It doesn't take that long, so I had to figure out, yeah, what we had to do for pacing. It turned out nice, and like I say, yeah, all those cuts, I just had to kind of speed through them. But I wanted to show a lot of them and a lot of the measurements and stuff, but we made sure that we showed and you described, kind of continually describing what you want to do, what you're thinking, show enough of that to keep people involved and interested.
Right.
And then keep a little bit where you're not sure. Then sometimes we do it where we're just like, let's not explain this part. And just let people go along with it and go, wait, what's he doing now? Why is he you know, let him like any good show. Like Bob Ross sometimes. He might tell you he's going to do a mountain, or he'll just start doing it. And then by the time you know he's doing it, then he'll tell you.
Yeah, right, exactly. Because, yeah, you got to give people the kind of benefit of the doubt that they can fill in with some of that stuff.
Right.
You know, some of it, it's funny, I'll often say, obviously, when I'm teaching, I'll be like, you know, blah, 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 obviously this. And I'm like, wait, hold on, not obviously.
Right.
You know, like, because you may not know that this is the thing. But in my mind, it's something that's obvious. But for everyone else, it's not. Like, it's weird. I've noticed, I've said it a couple times this week, because I'm working with my students right now. We're building that each year there's what's called National Parking Day. And what Parking Day is it's one day where, like, design firms and schools and independent artists and stuff around the world will build a mini park to fit inside of a parking spot. So they'll kind of, like, find a parking spot. They'll take it over. You know, maybe they pay the meter for the day, whatever it is. Like, they do it, you know, do it legally. And then in that parking spot, they'll build a little park. You know, so like maybe some AstroTurf, some seating, something to engage the public. But it's just basically to like give more green space to these like to urban areas, you know, kind of reclaim some of these private parking spaces.
Right.
Which like every parking space on the spot on the street is a private parking space. You can either park in that private parking space for free or you have to pay to park in that private parking space. So we've been building that. And so I've been teaching my students about using tools and using, you know, tape measure and square to mark off 2x4s and things like that. So it's kind of like this kind of wood shop feel to our class right now, which is really fun. And in my mind, like, I'm always like, you know, like to do this, you know, blah, 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 you bring this over here. Obviously you'll do this here. And then I'm like, no, it's not obviously. It's like, I need to make sure that I'm teaching the students that, you know, things that they need to know in a way that I'm not coming across as like, it's something that you already should know because I know it, you know. But
right, you don't want it to dismiss something that's an opportunity for learning or more questions, right? Because once someone says, well, you know how this and this and this, and you almost everyone will just nod along whether they know it or not, because they don't want to look foolish, right?
Right. Yeah. They're like, oh yeah, yeah.
it's like when someone you start talking about a subject you know about,
right?
And then they bring up, well, you know, obviously you've read blah, 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 and you kind of move on and you have to make a decision there whether you want to stop them and go, actually, no.
No, I haven't.
Or you just nod along and go, yeah. Like,
yeah, sure, whatever.
Hope they move on to another thing.
because usually you understand that within the context of what they're saying, you understand what they're going, where they're going for.
Right.
And that's what we do in the videos, right? Where we're like, within the context of the video, you understand what this thing is. Whether or not you really understand why I did it straight off the bat, eventually, if you're following along in the video, you'll understand what it's going to be. You know, it's like I don't have to say that every single thing I'm going to do in the video because I can do it and then attach it, and you'll be like, oh, that's where he was going with that, right? Like, and that's, I guess, that's the whole thing with the, like, obviously, it's like you assume that people will be able to follow along with a certain amount of, you know, fidelity because they're watching your video because they enjoy you making things, you know? So you're kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt of being somewhat maker-minded. They can fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
But not to the extent that a lot of, like, YouTube videos do where it's, like, 15 minutes and they're just, like, they're showing you what they did and not necessarily teaching you. We like to kind of balance that, right, with the channel. It's, like, teach you some things, explain some things, but then also kind of just show some stuff happening.
Yeah, and I left in the two big misses with you with the nail gun.
Oh, good,
you had
yeah.
to pull out.
It's funny because, like, out of all those, like, that was pretty good. Like, that
I know.
That it was only two. I was pretty impressed.
I,
was
like, I know. Pretty good. Yeah, it was good. It showed both of those. The one you pulled out, and then the second one, and I had edited it right, and I was going back to check it, you know, do quality control and watch it and make sure it felt right. And then I remember watching it again and not really remembering how I edited it, like, the week before when I started,
right,
and saying, "Oh, I see a mist there." Like, I could see the nail through,
right? Yeah.
And as I was watching, I was like, "I hope I put him pulling that second one out." Because we just saw, and then a few shots later, I pulled out.
Nice.
So I pat myself on the back for that. I was like, good job. Good job, Devin, a week ago. That's what I wanted to see.
That's what, yeah, right, exactly. I hope that I remember to edit that part in. You're like, oh, there it is. Nice.
Right, because so, you can see the mistake, and you want it, like, oh, he's going to fix that, right? If anyone catches
yeah,
it, you
right.
want them to go, oh, look, he missed one. And then, oh, there you go. He's pulling it out, you know.
Right, exactly, yeah. I guess if you showed, like, It'd be different if I had a bunch of misses, right? And you showed a bunch of misses, and you showed me pulling one out, mm-hmm. right? Then they could, then again, they could fill in the gaps that I pulled the other ones out. But
right,
yeah, that's fun. And then we did the photo shoot for the thumbnail, which was fun.
Yeah,
I like.
Oh right,
you, you kind of had the idea of like, what if you're like holding the box up, and you're like aiming it out, you know? So it's like, to me, in my mind, the person that I imagine doing that is the black guy from the movie Predator. When they're like the first Predator, where they're in the jungle and he's got the big Gatling gun.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
he's like, ah, and he's like, like, yeah, and the gun's just like screaming and he's just
yeah.
shooting. Like, he's got that big, heavy gun. That's kind of what I was like. That's what I was imagining. It was like holding this box up and the light is like my Gatling gun, like, just mowing down like the jungle.
But yeah,
so
that's,
that picture, that's who I felt like I was.
That's
the guy.
That's
like,
exactly.
He's in a bunch of 80s movies.
That's how I was thinking about it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's kind of the way you can hold it, though, right? One on top and kind of one on the bottom, hold it to your side.
Right, yeah.
Like you've got a big machine gun, right?
Yeah, right.
and, right, I wanted to see, because it's like anything. It's, I guess it's a movie trick, right? Or it's a concert trick. It's a bunch of stuff. You need the smoke. You need the
yeah.
atmosphere to make the lights look good. Lights don't look good unless there's some type of smoke or atmosphere. That's why
right.
at every concert, before they go on stage, the smoke machines are kicking.
Right. Yep. Yeah, exactly.
So you need to, you don't just want to see you holding something and it just, you, all you would see is that little dot of light coming out of the.
Right, exactly. Just the projector.
So we were thinking, I was like, first I asked you, I was like, do we have a smoke machine? I feel like someone has a smoke machine, or I think we did have one at one time. I don't know where it went. And then I was like, what can we do? And I don't, you said it or I said it, was like, hey, maybe like a smoke bomb. Because we got a firework mm-hmm. place right over the PA line.
Yeah, and you had said, like, what about smoke machine? And I was like, or we had said smoke bombs. And literally, like, the day of that you said that, when we were thinking about it, I had found, like, four smoke bombs in my basement. And I lit them off just for fun, like, with Corinne outside. And then you said later, I was like, oh, man, I had these, like, I literally just lit off these four, like, you know, five-year-old smoke bombs.
But I'm glad
anyway.
I'm glad you didn't have them, because what we did, I was talking to our dad about it, and he just, light a fire, throw some leaves on. I was like, it's one of those things, right?
Perfect.
Where someone, you just needed, what they say, like, you need fresh eyes on a project.
Yeah, exactly.
Or fresh ears. Yeah. You need
someone
else to take it.
Really
right.
quickly, yeah.
And I was like, oh, yeah, right away, endless fire. We have the fire pit right there. Yeah. Obviously, you have, it's starting to get a little bit chilly, so there's leaves all over. I was like, oh, it's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then it you can great. Try yeah. as many times as you want. The smoke bombs, we'd probably only buy a bag or two, and you kind of put them off, and I feel like we wouldn't have had as many right. chances, because we just, you know, we do what we do. We shot for like a half an hour and just kept throwing leaves on, shooting, let's try this angle, let's try that angle, let's move the light.
Yeah.
And then aim this a little bit more, Dustin, do some faces, or you're moving and you're getting your position nice, how you like it, you know. And it turned out cool. We had a really good one, and I'm actually really happy with that thumbnail. It's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and like the smoke is good and streaky, and it's colorful too, because it was like shooting the an actual screen, like the home screen of like of the Amazon or whatever it is. Like home screen was like was on the screen, so you got all these cool colors in it.
Right, which was another thing I wouldn't have even thought of unless it was on that home screen, because you know, a home screen to any smart TV, or you know, it has all your little apps, your little squares of color, and then around them it's like black or a dim color, so you get these all these beams of like different colors. And like if we would have just paused a screen of a single color, or you know, landscape, which actually it had gone to a screensaver. Remember when it happened, and we were like, wait, why does it look
weird? Yeah, exactly.
Like, it doesn't look interesting. Like, it looks like one big beam. What happened to all our colors? And
right, yeah. And we're like, the screens are ready to wake it back up.
Right, so all those cool colors are like, you know, YouTube and HBO Max and Amazon Prime, all the apps. And
the thumbnail's great, too, because it looks like, because the way it was, the fire was kind of between us. You were standing kind of off to the side of it, and it was to the left of us, but like to my left and your right, you know, so it was kind of right there. So I was aiming the box, you know, through it to try to get good, like, you know, light through the smoke. And so the photograph looks really cool because there's no smoke in front of me. I'm really clear. And this, and it's just the light. It's just this blast of light through smoke, which is like, how did we even do that? You know, like the little tricks of photography. Oh, try this. And we were just, unfortunately, it wasn't super windy that night. So we were getting like, the smoke was rising pretty much straight up, which was good because it wasn't blown all over the place. But it was also a little annoying because we had to like make it move better. You know, like, so we had Corinne out there with us, and she was fanning it around and kind of moving this big piece of cardboard in a circle to get it kind of to flow open. Yeah. And it worked really
and there were there are a lot of photos you covered in smoke, like the, you know, shifted. Yeah. That's the key, folks. You just take about, I'd say, 100 to 300 photos of what you think you want to do.
Right. Yeah.
Because it's free. Photos are free now.
Beauty of digital. Right. Yeah.
You never know if it's totally focused or someone, especially if you're shooting a person. The faces are constantly changing, or they're talking, or you get one thing and their face isn't right.
Yeah.
Just keep snapping. Just make space.
Right, exactly.
The only thing that stopped me from taking more photos was that on that same card was the photos of the birth of my daughter. So I had to stop. I was like, I'm not going to delete these. I'll leave these on here.
Yeah, those, and then also the one-year-old photos, right? It was like, had everything in there. It was like that whole thing, but it was funny. You were talking about doing that with her to kind of get that, like, one-year-old photo, and it was the same thing. You took, you know, like 100 photos of Maeve to get that one good one.
Yeah.
You know, just her. And it was funny watching, like, all the photos because you're taking them so fast. It was like this little animation of her kicking her legs out and smiling and making weird faces and moving all around. It was great.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how people did it with film in the old days. Like, who would shoot children and families? Like, oh, that had to be so frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You have a session, you use, like, I don't know, three rolls of film or something. So maybe 60 photos, maybe 90 photos. I mean, I guess that's the thing, right? You would take multiple rolls.
Right. But it was a slow process. You got like one chance at every smile instead of a shutter that would take 5 pictures a second.
Right. Exactly.
You know, once you start smiling, you just hold it in. And you get, you know, you get a little bit. But anyway, that thumbnail was fun. Did that and I edited it and did some stuff, and I always vignette slightly. It's a nice look. It's a nice finished look.
Right. Yeah. For people who are not sure, vignette is basically like a little bit of a darkness around the photo that comes in from the sides. It's almost like a circle of darkness that's like, it starts to crop in on the photo. So you vignette a little bit. It can just kind of darken everything on the outside. Focus in the middle.
If I'm thinking correctly, it was because the way lenses used to be made, they had darkness. That's how, it's just a lens thing. An older lens. They figured out how to clear up the edges of the frames later on. But for a long time, you had that. So,
yeah, right.
That defect looked like what people thought professional photos look like, or what people thought something like a older photo or a Western style photo, right? They always vignette the shit out of it. And then people did the opposite, right? So long for glamour photos, where they would do the white vignetting. They do the white cloud. It looks like clouds, right? So it seems like this glamorous, even though it doesn't really look, but it's the thing they used a lot for instead of making a harsh oval for someone's portrait, they would do like...
Right. It would like fade in from white into like their color. Right. It's like coming out of a cloud.
So I do a little bit, and I did a little bit more of that, and then I had to really black out. Luckily, on the left side of the frame was just darkness behind you where the trees were. So as the bottom was, I could see a lot of the warmth, and the fire pit was like you could see some flames, so I blacked all that out.
And just wiped it all out. Like, everything to my like left in the photo and next to the box and stuff, that was all just... the light, because there were lights on me, and so there was lighting up the stuff in the background, which is like a hedgerow and a tree, and I noticed when you sent it to me, I was like, nice. You just kind of like, psh, so it's just the focus on me, and then holding and the light and psh, blasting it from my hips.
I'm still learning stuff like Lightroom and things like that. That I haven't had any training in that type of thing.
Right.
Mine's all in editing. So stuff like that, I keep finding stuff like... Obviously, there's stamp tools and healing tools where you're clearing things up. There you go. I did.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's the thing that I always do. Obviously, this and this, like.
Right. Because when you're talking
if
about basics,
Exactly. It's you just think the people know the basics, right?
Yeah, the computers now, they can take, if there's like a scratch on your face, I can click on it with a circle, and it will find a color nearby that will match that. And then it'll make it disappear. So any blemishes, that's how they get rid of it.
Right.
Stuff like that. If there's big, crazy things like that, sometimes you'll clear it out that way. But there's also, which I learned just looking through, the brush tool in Lightroom, that it's a gradient brush in a circle, right? But wherever you lay it down, you can, again, adjust... all the same photo things, all the same iris and exposure and contrast and sharpness and yada 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 in that spot.
Nice. So you set those levels that you want, and then you put it in that
so
spot.
So if you want a certain, like, my issue was if my exposure was too hot, everything was too bright, or maybe let's say everything's set at a good level, but I still think the person, the subject, is too dark. Everything else looks around it. Like, I can see out the window and I can see trees. But since your exposure is set for outside the window sometimes, right, everything inside is going to be dark.
Right, yeah.
But so if I think I still want to see those trees, I can pick that area and just set that area at that exposure using this brush. I'll just grab that tree area to spray it down. Yeah. And then set everything there, and then bring everything else up.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, right. So that's
what I did. So basically, like, masking it to, like, stay in a certain way, and then everything else you can bring up around it.
Right.
That's cool.
Right. Yeah,
so you just, like, so use it on me and
whatever. I use it on you. I brighten you up and the things, and then I switched and took another brush, and all I did was drop the exposure for all the outside stuff.
Right, yeah.
So woods and... the fire under you was just, I just dragged the exposure all the way down and sprayed it, which turns it basically black.
Nice.
It's nice. But that's sure if people know about it, they're like, duh, that's how it's done. That's how it gets
done.
Obviously, Devin, you don't know. How do you not know Lightroom?
Stamp tool, clone tool, obviously. Come on. It is. Those programs are really nice. I mean, I learned Photoshop when I was in, in art school. And just the basics of Photoshop, the things that you can do are just amazing. Like, once I learned how to Photoshop an image. I never applied to anything after that with my artwork without touching up that artwork in Photoshop. Mm-hmm. Not to change anything, but to make, because when you take from real life to a photograph, there's a change. Like, there's mm-hmm. always a change. It's like the light was on it. It was either cool light or it was warm light, and all your colors change from what you look at it and the way you want it to look based off of how your eyes are. So then you can actually, like, I would put all my images in Photoshop. I would bump up the saturation, or I'd make, like, the high the contrast up, or I'd cool, you know, the temperature up or down, or, you know, I'd get it until it looked the way that I saw it in my piece.
Right.
And then I'd apply, like, because inevitably you take a picture and it doesn't look like the way you think that your piece looks in right. my eyes, you know, because, and that's the other thing too. Everyone's eyes are a little different, right? I'm looking at the right. piece. It's going to look away. It's going to look a certain way. So I want, if I can control that. Now, obviously if I put that piece up on a wall and I'm showing it in a museum, I can't control that. But what I can control is if I take a digital image of that and put it online, I can control what that looks like. So, mm-hmm. you know, the magic of Photoshop or any other, like, photo editing programs is really cool.
It's a cool thing. Yeah. Yeah, I think everyone. But now people just use filters and.
Yeah. So it reminds me, actually, when.
Sorry, real quick. Every time. So I have pictures of my daughter every month. That's pretty much all we put online. Was mm-hmm. Of that, of her once a month.
Typical parents. Now all the pictures of Maeve. No more pictures of Caitlin and Devin.
Oh, yeah. We're done with us.
We're done with us. They have a progeny.
But we're like, we'll just do one a month. Keep people updated.
Yep.
And so we did that. And my wife always jokes, after I'm done, I'll sit here and I'll make it look pretty and work on it and bring her in and say, what do you think? You like this or that? Which one? Or I will pick the ones I really like, and there'll be like six or eight of them, right?
Right.
Then I line them up on the monitor, and I bring her in and kind of let her, and we talk about which one we want, or one or two. And then I work on those, and I get done, and I'm like, all right, I'm done. I send it to her, and she's always like, all right, what filter should I put on it? At the end, I'm like, don't you dare.
Son of a bitch.
Don't you dare.
I will say that, like, I always filter Instagram photos. You know, I always do something to bump them up when I'm taking them. But when I post pictures of, like, thumbnails that you send me, I don't ever do anything to it.
Right. It's done. I know, like, it's done.
Yeah, exactly. You've done everything. You have it the way that it should look. Like, occasionally I'll, like, hit a filter and I'm like, what am I doing? Like, I don't need to filter this. Like, yeah. It's already done. It's filtered. Yeah, exactly.
It's been personally filtered. So it's ready to go. Don't touch it.
What filter? No filter.
But she's just messing with me. She knows how I am. So
yeah, I was thinking. I had Sean on last week because Devin was mm-hmm. working the Orioles game, and you also had the Avett Brothers concert afterwards. So
yeah,
Sean joined us and did a really awesome job. It was really fun. Again, if you guys don't follow Sean, Crafting a Life I Want, go ahead and follow him on Instagram at Crafting a Life I Want, and also go over to YouTube and subscribe there. But we were having a conversation where he was talking about one of the pieces of artwork that I did for he and Kate when they got married. It's a kind of a big, maybe a 29x41 or so charcoal drawing of a spot up in the woods up at Lock Raven Reservoir, which is you know, a reservoir near us here in Maryland, in Baltimore. And I was kind of walking through the woods, and I knew I wanted to do a charcoal drawing, and I wanted it to be of, like, trees or something, but I also wanted it to have some type of a metaphor of a marriage, right? And I'd done similar things in the past, and kind of you see two trees that are kind of interlocked together, and so those are interesting. So I'm kind of walking through, and I saw just these two pine trees, approximately the same height, maybe 20 or 30 feet tall, in the middle of a fairly deciduous forest, right? So hardwoods, yeah. So tall poplars and things, and then these two pine trees. So I was like, perfect. That's exactly what I want, right? It's natural. I don't have to make it up. I can just draw what I see. And so I did a drawing of that, and then I don't remember specifically, but Sean said that I had this, like, tree in the foreground that I put in because the composition needed something in that space. Mm. So in my mind, I don't remember doing this, but what I probably would have done was I would have looked for a tree around that I could reference as that and just slide it into place to mm-hmm. be in that spot. And he was saying how that, like, when he talks to me about art, it's different than when he talks to Kate, his wife, about art. because she's a photographer. So in her mind, she doesn't edit the image at all. She captures the image within a space, but then afterwards she definitely edits. Like, it's that whole right. Photoshop mentality. Like, she bumps up saturation and she changes color and light, and she does, you know, all of her photos are edited in a way to do what she wants to do. Right. That's when she has the power, is to right. like make those edits afterward, those post photo edits. So, but yeah, I definitely, it was fun to talking about that, 'cause I definitely do that. And I definitely will change things in a landscape to work for the image. Right. 'Cause as an artist, the image comes first. Like, I'm trying to say mm-hmm. something with the image has to feel like, because as a landscape painter, I'm looking at this 360 degree or 180 degree angle of everything I'm seeing, and I have to figure out where in that I choose to put in a rectangle, and then I crop everything in that rectangle. So then that rectangle, that outer line of that rectangle, now is like, has power. And so what I put in there, am I completely true to what's there, or do I, as a painter or as an artist, that I'm not just taking a photograph, then I have to I will activate the different areas of that rectangle to make sure that it feels right as a composition.
Right. It's how much of that do you want to shift and move? Because if you have a bush to your right, you're getting the shape and form of it, but you're also adding a little stick here and there just to make out the bush form that you know how to paint.
Right,
or you know how to work with your palette knife right. to get a bush look, to get stick look. So you see the shape, but you're still, so that's like the smallest version of changing things.
Right, exactly.
There's a tree here and this is the shape of the tree, but I still got to get this right, and maybe a branch here looks better. And then you can go as big as you want and move a whole tree off to your right in the center of the frame if that's something you.
Yeah, exactly right. And then, that goes from, like, me as a landscape painter to Bob Ross as a painter of trees and mountains. So, like, you take everything you've ever seen in history of landscapes and you just arrange it in a landscape the way you want it to.
Yeah, add your happy tree right there in the middle.
Right, exactly.
Or he's always, like in the documentary, and when, every time you watch him, when he does everything in half an hour, so at the end, if he's getting close to time, he knows he's got like three minutes left. He's like, "All right, here's when you're brave." And he drops a giant black streak, straight down the middle, or off to the side. Then he puts a giant tree in there or something, you know.
But, I like that, yeah. And the way he talks about it, like, you know that he's an artist first, right? Because he talked about doing that, and what that does is that then like. It activates the space that's close to you.
Right.
Because it's not everything is far away. When you're in a landscape, you have things close to you. So by putting something really close, then all of a sudden, then you're creating way more depth in your image, right? It's not just everything that's out like 40 feet and beyond. It's you have something that's up 5 feet from you and something that's like a foot from you. And you've got these little sticks and grasses that are coming up within your view right in front of you, you know? So you're really activating and pushing that space, which is kind of what he said in so many words, but
Like,
by putting that, you're bringing things all the way to the front. I love that. Yeah, the bravery test. Here's your bravery test.
No, he's great. Okay. So you got a trivia test.
Yeah. I'm going to switch gears. I have a trivia. I thought it'd be fun to do something. So this is episode 61. Sean's with us on episode 60, so not that it matters any, but I felt like it was a milestone. We hit the zeros.
you try to make me jealous? What are you doing?
Yeah. So Sean was with me during 60.
He was here. I don't know where you were. Yeah, at a concert or something.
Yeah, hanging out, which I heard that was a really good concert. Dad said he had a good time.
That was great, man. Real quick, it was one of the first concerts. We haven't had, we've had small concert after games. If people don't know, I work for the Orioles in game entertainment stuff, and we've had a few little acoustic things after, and they've been okay, but we usually don't get well-known people to come and do shows. And then we got the Avett Brothers, and it was very cool, but it was raining. And we weren't sure, and the game had already gone late, and it was like almost 10 o'clock, and it was still raining, and they had to decide whether, because they had to bring out these trailers onto the field and set everything up. And But they did. They finally did. Finally stopped raining. They put up all these trailers and these big stacks of speakers, and nice. Man, they blasted the place like it was loud. But it was great. Yeah, man. It was, I think I put a picture on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was cool.
And then Justin Dietrich said he's seen him like 4 times.
Oh, nice.
He's awesome. A huge fan of him. And he saw him at Red Rocks, too, apparently. Oh, I was like, man, that's so cool. Yeah, that's hard to beat, huh?
Yeah.
But it was great. A great show. The crowd that was there was all into it. They had some people on the dirt right in front of.
Oh, yeah.
Right around second base. And they had to buy tickets, I guess, but... Right. Anyway, that's where I was. That was really, really good show. And I just sat, I sat up in the control room, but then I just went right in the press box and kicked my feet up and watched them right there.
Nice. That's awesome. That's
great.
It's a good spot. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. Well, yeah. So I just thought it'd be fun to do a trivia because I haven't done one for you in a while. So this is the 15 most difficult movie trivia questions. Movie trivia questions.
Oh, gosh.
So
was this from a list?
It's just from online. It's from screenrant.com.
Okay. So
it's called the 15 most difficult. I look through them and you can decide if they're the most difficult or not. So you may know some of these that I don't know. Probably you do because you're a movie guy and that's what your background is in. All right.
Yeah, but I will say I'm defending myself early here. So when I mess up, I'm not good at remembering names. Okay. And things like that. But yeah, let's do it. I'm ready.
Yeah, okay. Here we go. Okay, so the first question is, what film was so scary that theater staff supposedly carried smelling salts for guests? Now this it's an old one, I'll tell you that.
Psycho?
Nope.
Is it The Exorcist?
No. It's older.
Older.
You may not know it, but
hang on. Older than Psycho.
Yep. What was your second one? You said The Exorcist?
Yeah.
That's on the description as what ones may think are the most scary ones. Says, at first, many might consider a plethora of guts and gore fests like Texas Chainsaw Massacre or The Exorcist.
But Psycho is a mental,
a
scary film.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do we got?
So this says, the film in question isn't one of the many modern horrors, but the original Phantom of the Opera. Lon Chaney was a genius of an actor who did his own makeup for the roles. His Phantom was so terrifying in its time that, according to legend, cinemas were encouraged to keep smelling salts on hand for viewers that fainted.
I feel like that is something that a PR guy came up with, selling tickets.
Scary.
Right. Like back then, there are smelling salts on hand. There's doctors nearby.
Like. Right, exactly. The original Phantom of the Opera. You know, it definitely looks like it's something from like the 50s or something. You know, it's or, a little one, but
yeah,
that's pretty obscure. The other ones aren't as
okay.
Obscure.
All right,
or maybe they are. I don't know. All right. So number 14. What was the first movie to use profanity?
Can I get a time range?
Sure.
Nothing comes right to mind.
It's a super famous line that has a mild profanity in it.
Casablanca?
No, but you're kind of, that's the same time period.
I don't give a damn. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
What movie is that? Played Against Sam?
Nope.
No, that's frankly, Casablanca, isn't it?
Frankly, my dear, I don't
get it. Oh.
Nope.
What's that from?
It's from Gone with the Wind.
Gone with the Wind. I don't know why. What was I thinking Casablanca for?
You know, what's that? That's at the end. What does he say? He's like, he says to her, he's like, yeah, I forget.
But anyway, okay.
It's that same thing. It's the same.
Do I get half a point for getting the line?
Yeah, you got the line. Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's it, right? That's the line.
So I'm half a point out of two.
Yeah, okay, not bad. 25%. All right. Number 13, how much power does it take to fuel the flux capacitor in Back to the Future?
Oh.
I'll tell you it's...
Anyway, I know. Well, I don't mean, know. Yeah. It's like 100 gigawatts or something.
Nope. Not 100.
10,000 gigawatts.
Nope. It's a, I'll say it's a something point something. Something point something gigawatts.
Yeah, I know gigawatts, that. Right? I don't know. I don't know what the number is.
1.21. 1.21 gigawatts to make the DeLorean move through time-space continuum.
Well, I got gigawatts, but I'll just...
Yeah, you did get gigawatts.
We'll say, yeah. I don't need points on that one. I'll say I still have half.
All right, all right. Okay, number 12. What was the first horror movie to win an Oscar?
Psycho.
No.
I'm just going to keep going Psycho.
It's got to be Psycho.
The Birds.
Nope.
I'll
tell you, it's a movie from the early 90s. It's the first horror movie to win an Oscar.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's more modern, but not modern modern, right? Is that like 30 years old?
Scream? No. That's more funny, but that's a really good movie. I'll tell you
that the film also won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Actress, and Best Adapted Screenplay.
Whoa, it's a horror movie.
One of the most successful and influential films to ever grace the Oscars.
Oh, boy.
It had Anthony Hopkins in it.
Silence of the Lambs.
Yep, Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That's a good one. Yeah. All right, so what do we got? You have half a point so far.
Yeah.
It's okay. Sorry. It's coming around. All right, number 11. What was the first and only animated feature to be nominated for Best Picture?
Toy Story?
Nope. Older. First and only, not animated, animated feature.
Nominated Beauty and the Beast?
You got it. Beauty and the Beast. Nice. That's pretty good. I'll give you a point for that because I didn't have to give you a clue and you got on your second try, but you got it. Nice.
All right.
So we got 1.5. All right. Number 10. What? Oh, man, this is dumb. I almost skipped this one, but whatever. What is the number on the roof of the bus in the movie Speed? The number on the roof.
Yeah, I have no idea. 50.
Nope. It's 25-25. It says it's seen on the roof in multiple shots. I was flipping through these and I was like thinking, should I skip some? And I was like, I'll just read them all. But yeah, there were a few that were like, I was like, eh, or maybe not.
Yeah.
I just remember that one. I was like, really? Speed?
Well, that is obscure.
That's obscure. Okay. All right. So number 9, how many meters was the Death Star's thermal exhaust port?
All these number questions. I'm not watching it for the numbers. It's like 2 meters.
Dang, right on the money. Yeah. Got it. Nice. Yes. 2 meters. Dang.
All right. I pulled that one out.
Yeah, right. 2 meters. When Luke and Leia and Han and Chewbacca successfully delivered R2-D2 to the Rebel Alliance in the original Star Wars, they used the technical readouts of the Death Star he was carrying to discover the battle station's weakness. A small thermal exhaust port.
He said, because I knew it was a small number because he talks about I used to shoot blah, 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 womp rats out of my speeder. And, he like talks about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I can do that. Whatever the line was.
Okay. Yeah. And it says the plan was to have the X-Wings pilots fire 2 torpedoes into the port to set off a thermal. I was looking at the picture and I was like, did they fly into that? 2 meters? Like, they didn't have any jets that were like 6 feet wide. Space. No, okay. All right, nice. Okay, number 8. What was the first sports film to win an Academy Award for Best Picture?
Chariots of Fire.
No. A lot younger.
A lot newer.
Well, I guess it's. I'll give you a clue. It's from the mid 70s.
Mid 70s. I don't know.
It was Rocky, the first Rocky. Yeah. And it's surprising, actually. It says it beat out All the President's Men and Taxi Driver for Best Picture.
Mm.
And it was the highest grossing film in 1976.
Rocky. That's a Rocky. Good one.
Yeah. All right. Number seven. Okay. What was the first movie to be rated PG-13?
I feel like I've heard this before.
I'll tell you. Let me see. Hold on. Okay. So it's from 1984. I'll
give you I was going to say, it's like when they started adding PG-13 as a thing.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Any more clues?
It says this new edition was the PG-13 was a response to the wave of parental complaints following the release of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom in May of the same year, which may have been released as a PG or whatever, and people thought it was too much. Let's see.
How's it too much? PG, it's parental guidance, right?
Right, exactly.
Come on.
PG-13. This is a, it has, let's see, I'm trying to give you one of the characters. What's the guy from Two and a Half Men?
That Charlie Sheen?
Show. Yeah, Charlie Sheen. He's in it.
Hot Shots?
Nope.
Platoon?
Nope.
No, he wasn't.
Maybe he's a little younger in this than he was in, like, Platoon. Teenagers, guns.
Red Dawn.
Yeah, Red Dawn.
Nice.
Yeah, I'll give that to you.
Wolverine,
you got it right. Like, I probably wouldn't have got it. Maybe I would have. I don't know. But all right, I'll give that to you. We got 3.5 points. Not bad. All right, here we go. Number six. Who was the first female director to earn over $100 million at the box office? I could give you the movie that did it. I don't, and I'm not familiar with the, like, I wouldn't have been able to come up with this, but maybe you will be able to. I'm not sure.
Sofia Coppola?
Nope. It was a film from 1988 starring Tom Hanks.
I don't know.
She was known for her role as Laverne in the show Laverne and Shirley.
I don't know. I think Patty.
Close.
Patty. What's her name? I don't know her full name, but I'm close, right?
Yeah, you're close. Patty is close. It's not Patty, but it does start with a P and it ends in a Y.
Peggy Lloyd. I don't know what's her name.
Penny Marshall.
Penny Marshall.
That's pretty good, though. You knew the name, right? Was that was the thing. Like, I didn't know that name at all. Like, the fact she's that you one knew of, the name is.
Yeah, she's one of the. You know, in my, I don't know many women directors. I mean, there haven't been that many. In my defense, who have been huge, who's had huge hits,
right? Yeah, exactly.
For whatever reason. So, but that one, I know she's made some.
Yeah, so the movie that ones. The movie was big with Tom Hanks.
I was thinking it was some type of comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
So okay, cool. Gonna,
I'll give you a half point for that one because you were on the right track. So you're up to four. All right, here we go. It. Number five. What? Dang, I just heard my echo in your headset. So careful.
Did you? Oh, I pulled my headphone away from my head for a second.
So. Everyone will hear that in the audio. Five. All right. What was the name of the young girl in Jurassic Park?
Ugh.
Come on, man.
See, like I said, for one, I don't know names. For two, it's slightly embarrassing because I think Jurassic Park's my favorite movie of all time.
I was going to say, come on.
But I don't. See, I'm not in it for names, and my brain just doesn't remember names. Definitely in life, I don't remember names.
Right.
Like, I can tell you about every scene she's in. And, right, you know,
exactly.
So the daughter, or the granddaughter.
Yeah, right, John Hammond's granddaughter.
Right.
Do you remember the boy's name?
No, like, I don't remember any of their names, really.
Remember when he's, like, yelling at him, like, come on, climb. What does he say? Is like, I can't remember it either. It's like Tommy or something, or...
See, yeah, I'm terrible with names. I love that movie, and I can explain the whole scene, you know? Exactly. But I can't. Their names, I never... This is something my wife would be good at. She's like, that's blah, 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 you know? It's like when I go into a room with my wife, I'm like, all right, introduce yourself. and get the name for me.
Right, exactly. I will read you the end of this. Says, while even casual fans know her as well as her particular famous scene at the buffet with the green jello, few either know or can remember her name.
So you're right. How many times do they say in the script is the thing?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you're in the majority of people who can't remember her name.
Okay. What's her name?
It's Lex.
Lex. Oh, I guess it's her. Murphy. I think the only time it's like her brother says it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
To her.
Right. Yeah. Lex. I know. As soon as I saw that, right, I could hear his voice too.
See, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah,
I guess that's why this is one of the tough ones. Yeah. Lex. Lex
Murphy.
Movie,
though.
Yeah.
And right. Speaking of the movie, we watched, well, some of it on the video, on the projector thing.
We did, yeah, I know.
And we don't have any strikes or anything against us for using
Using films. Yeah,
I did, for one, I had our music over top of it, some of it. Okay, I had some bongo music, and one was a real wide shot, and it was only about 3 seconds, and then one was a tight shot, but I zoomed way in just to kind of get their faces and stuff. So
it shouldn't
be picked up by a... computer or something like that. Yeah, hopefully. So don't report us, folks, please. We only use like 10 seconds total.
All right, number 4. In what movie did John Wayne first call someone Pilgrim?
Listen here, Pilgrim. See, that's the thing. I don't know my old westerns. Which I just watched the Magnificent Seven.
Ah, nice.
Just a week ago.
Or the newer one. Okay.
The original.
Oh, okay, yeah. The new one was good, too. I saw that.
I didn't see the new one. Do you know the original? That's a trivia question for you.
Have I seen the original? Is that
right? Or do you know what it was? What the Magnificent Seven is based off of?
Yeah, it should be what's his name? Is it Kurosawa, the
right, it's, yeah. Yep.
Seven Samurai.
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Come on, man.
I'm just saying.
That's an easy one. All right. So, first movie. I don't know if can you name some early John Wayne movies?
Not really. I haven't seen many John Wayne westerns. Like, we just didn't. We didn't watch. I like westerns, but
I'll tell you that it's a longer title, but the first words are "The Man Who
Shot Liberty Valance."
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
Okay, so I have seen that one. Nice.
Yeah, The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So I'll give you a half point for that one. Charity points.
You got a lot of half charity points here.
Yeah, right, exactly. This one's going to be near impossible unless for some reason you know this, but I would not think you did. But what location served as the setting for many of John Hughes's movies? Now, we're not like a big like Breakfast Club family or 16 Candles family or Ferris Bueller family. You know,
You mean a town or a school or what?
It's a town. Yeah.
Mm, yeah, I have no clue. Is it in California somewhere? Or?
No, it's
might be Midwest. I don't know. Ohio, maybe?
Illinois. So it says John Hughes was also known for setting many of his movies in Shermer, Illinois. Mm. A fictional suburb just outside of Chicago. This was just because John Hughes himself had lived in Northbrook, Illinois. Northbrook had originally been known as Shermerville, and in fact, his own high school was located on Shermer Road.
There you go.
That's a weird one. I guess, like I said, you know, we weren't really like a Breakfast Club family, you know.
Yeah.
Some
people
like love that kind of 80s movies, and are like, we didn't really grow up with them.
No.
All right. I would not be surprised if you get this next one, but you might not. Okay. There you go.
Stop setting me up with the way you think I should do.
I think you might get this one, but I don't know. All right. What was George Lucas's original last name for Indiana Jones? So it wasn't Indiana Jones. It was Indiana something else.
Ah, damn. Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I was like, you know, you watch enough documentaries and stuff on different it might have been something you picked up along
the way. I think I've watched, you know, the behind the scenes of those movies.
Right, yeah.
Indiana.
I can give you a kind of general clue that it's another like really common last name, the way Jones is a common last name.
Smith.
Smith is it. You got it. Nice. Indiana Smith.
Indiana Smith. Do you know how the name Indiana came up?
This isn't a trivia for me. This is a trivia for you.
Well, I need to get something here that I know some things.
Like, I know about things. Indiana. No.
I think that was, it was someone's dog. Either George Lucas's or Spielberg's dog was named Indiana.
I have heard that. You may have told me that at one point. Yeah. All right. Yeah, so it says... George Lucas pitched the idea to Steven Spielberg at a Hawaiian resort while hiding out during the release of Star Wars in 1977. The directors later teamed up to make the film. However, Steven Spielberg convinced George Lucas to change the lead character's name since Smith sounded too plain and ordinary.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, number one, last question. What is the number one most inspirational film according to the American Film Institute? What's the number one most inspirational film?
That's a weird...
It is a weird one.
Metric.
Yeah, I know, right? The most number one... Because, like, what's inspirational? Is that, like, sports? Is that, So what's the number one most inspirational film?
It's a Wonderful Life.
You got it. First try. Nicely done. That's it. It's a Wonderful Life.
Nice.
Well done. Yep. This Christmas classic directed by Frank Capra barely made a dent at the box office when it was released in 1946, starring James Stewart, Donna Reed, blah, 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 and Lionel Barrymore. I'll leave that in there, actually. It's a Wonderful Life is considered one of the greatest films of all time today and continues to inspire audiences every Christmas season.
It's a good one.
You got it. That was
Frank Capra is the...
Frank Capra.
He did, like, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. A bunch of stuff with Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah. Yeah, right on.
Yeah, great movie. That one still holds up.
So after all of this, I want to ask you one more question about films. This doesn't have to be a recommendation, but what are, like, a couple good films that people should see if they're not, even if they're not, like, filmy people, but they should see some of the best ones, like Jurassic Park. You know, that's one that, like, everyone should see because it's such a good movie. What are your, like, top five films that you think people should see?
Oh, geez. It'll depend on what people wanted to watch.
Right. So, yeah, you can give me, like, a kind of a general all around, maybe, like, action, comedy, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't know. It doesn't have to be five. Just a couple movies, you think.
To preface, I'm a movie person, but I never went that deep into obscure movies other than the basic stuff, film school stuff we got.
Right, yeah.
Like, exactly. Everyone has to watch this and this and this. Like, okay. But it was always trying to find quality. And the whole low down and dirty movie making, I never liked. Mm-hmm. It seemed too dirty. It seemed lazy. It seemed like a way to get away with something.
Right.
I'm more impressed by spectacle and knowing that these huge things are being done. That's why I'm not really a fan of, like, CG or Marvel movies, because it is a lot of work. There are a lot of computer people sitting around, but I like the idea of people, craftsmen, building a set and blowing things up and actually driving cars and actually doing stunts. That excites me. I see it being done, and that's, you're watching a spectacle. You're getting your money's worth.
Right.
You're watching people do amazing things.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly. Now, obviously, like you said, CG it's something on its own, but there's, you know, but that's, it's like Photoshop, right? Like,
yeah,
you can make things. Yeah, right. You're not impressed as much with that, right?
Because I would be more impressed by a 20-foot jump, a car jumping something with a real person in it, than I would a flying car in CG, right? Because I know someone actually did it and they had to set it up. So,
yeah,
I like a lot of the hits, like everyone else. So, like when I went to film school, I still love No Country for Old Men.
Yeah.
And There Will Be Blood.
Yep.
All those films. Awesome. Any Stanley Kubrick is just, he's the master, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So that's 2001. Clockwork Orange, Spartacus, even though that's a little bit older, Paths of Glory, stuff like that. If you want to go back to Japanese films, like we talked about, Akira Kurosawa, he was really great. And I like, again, he has quotes about he would work on movies and then it'd be like a samurai movie. And they'd be getting all the horses out of the trailers in the morning. Yeah. And then the fog would be rolling in and it would look great. And he said, why aren't we shooting this? Like, this is beautiful. Why aren't we capturing this? We're all going to wait around until all the beauty fades.
Right.
Yeah. And like, we're all done our coffee. We should be capturing this now. And he was all about getting the best image, right. And waiting for it. So stuff like that, modern films.
What Akira Kurosawa film would you suggest?
Seven Samurai or Ran is a really good one.
Right.
That's a color one he did. But everything he does, I mean.
What's that? Is that R? How's that spelled?
R-A-N.
R-A-N. Ran.
I think,
I'm going to put these in the show notes, so I'm writing down your movies. So
I think George Lucas and some guys and like Coppola all helped him produce that. He was getting older and people weren't giving him money to make stuff anymore.
Right.
And they helped him make a color movie. I think it was based off of Macbeth or something, right? Something like a retelling.
Right, yeah.
But he's great. I love Paul Thomas Anderson, anything he does. Like I said, There Will Be Blood.
Right,
yeah. Boogie Nights, anything he does. Stanley Kubrick and Spielberg films. They're always really good. Quentin Tarantino, people might shit on him, but he's just the best at distilling the best things.
Yeah.
Right. He's just an awesome rock band who's listened to blues and rock and roll all his life.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And came up with his own thing like everyone else does. And he's just made the best version of all these things.
Yeah.
You can't
hurt that.
Knock him for that. Awesome. He makes the best versions of all these things. He knows what's awesome, and he picks it and chooses it and says, I'm gonna stick that in it, and he does it so well. So just general big stuff that people might know, but
cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I'm sure the listeners will appreciate it. Give them something to listen to. I have so all the like names that you said of movies I put down here. You know, people, if you're listening, you can find Quentin Tarantino, you can find Spielberg, but I put some of the ones down, so I'll put them in the show notes so people can see, you know, fun stuff to watch. I haven't seen 2001, or at least I've not seen it all the way through. I've probably seen Spartacus, same thing, like Paths of Glory, I probably haven't seen. I haven't actually seen Seventh Samurai all the way through. I've seen scenes and parts of it. I haven't seen Ran. I've seen Boogie Nights. I've seen Clockwork Orange. I've seen There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men. So I'll have to watch them. You mentioned 2001 multiple times, and I still haven't seen it. So,
I will say you have to be in the right mind space for that one. But it's so good. Maybe that'll be one of our movie nights.
There you go. Yeah, nice.
Cool. See, I'm trying to think of something obscure that people. You know, all those things I feel like people have heard of.
Right. But I mean, I've never heard of Ran, so.
Okay.
That's a good one, you know. And like you said, that's a Kurosawa that's a little bit more modern, you know, so it's a little bit different or a little bit him later. You know, people think of the Seven Samurai as like.
Right, black and white.
Kurosawa. Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you watch The Mandalorian, all their samurai scenes are based off of his stuff, but.
Yeah, right.
Actually done pretty poorly. Scenes. Like, the reason his stuff worked, they didn't use. They just used some of the visual cues, but they didn't use the pacing, which was weird to me. I was a little disappointed, but oh well.
Yeah. What's her name? Bryce Dallas Howard.
Yeah.
Didn't she say that, like, she was in, like, when she was. I was watching some of the extras, she said, like, as a kid, she would, like, her dad, you know, Ron was like somewhere and like met with Kurosawa and she was there and like they were all having dinner together, like all these awesome directors, and like she thinks about back as a kid, like just being part of that crazy situation, you know. And then it's cool. All right, Dad, what do you got for recommendations this week, or I can say mine since you just recommended a whole bunch of movies. else you have something.
Yeah, I'll just go with those. While you're saying yours, I'll try to think of something maybe a little bit more obscure.
Okay. So my recommendation this week I want to pull up his actual description, what he has on here, because it's fun. There it is. Okay. So this is Maximilian Neukoffler, which is, I guess, German. Woodsman's Finest on Instagram. So if you guys don't know Woodsman's Finest, he is, according to his own description, he's a voyager, craftsman, knife maker, leather maker, spoon carver, martial artist, woodsman, photographer, beard ambassador, Viking, time traveler.
Oh my.
So if you don't know Woodsman's Finest, you may, if you're familiar with Liam Hoffman, Liam's worked with Max on designing like carving axes. So he has like a carving axe that he put out, which is a combination of his Liam and Woodsman's Finest and Max, their kind of collaboration. But he does like really, really beautiful spoon carving. That's, I think, what he does most and posts on Instagram often. So you can follow him at Woodsman's, so WOODSMANS, Woodsman's _Finest on Instagram. But he does beautiful work. His spoons are just, I'm always really amazed because I have in my mind a certain idea of what a carved spoon looks like, and he always like breaks that mold. I mean, you know, he's got spoons. They look like spoons, but then they'll be asymmetrical, or they'll have cool patterns carved into them, and just they're super clean, really nicely done. He just does beautiful work, and he also shows fun pictures of being outdoors and knives that he's made, and you know, uses a lot of his own stuff. So check him out, Woodsman's Finest. Really awesome dude, Maximilian Neukoffler, and at Woodsman's _Finest on Instagram. Check him out.
Nice. I thought of a Woody Allen movie, if you guys are willing to watch Woody Allen.
Yeah.
We'll see when this comes out and how long, you know, people still will tolerate him. But Love and Death is one that I don't think a lot of people have seen. Like, you know, you can watch Annie Hall or Manhattan, some of the big ones. But
right, yeah.
Love and Death, he did. It's like a costume thing, but it's like a straight comedy. It definitely has like the depth of Woody Allen, like talking about philosophical things, and it's like a Russian, you know, like based off Russian philosophy, but he's like also a soldier, and it's just Woody Allen being goofy in like this period piece, like costume drama thing.
Oh, cool.
And it's really good. Who's he with? What's her name? Diane Keaton. Like, she's in a bunch of his other stuff, yeah. Right? So yeah. She's in it. She's like the girl he's going after, and that's a really good Woody Allen one. I don't think, if you're not a huge Woody Allen fan, maybe you don't know about Love and Death.
Yeah. Yeah, I love Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just such a cool movie, and just, like, that's one of those ones that it reminds me of. It kind of has the, not necessarily exactly, but the feeling of like a Quentin Tarantino movie where the dialogue is so important. Like, there's so much conversation, you know, like, and it's so fun to follow along, and like, you can either get bogged down in that or you can really enjoy it. And I just like, I really enjoy it. I love conversation, and I love dialogue that's really well
written. Right. If they write it. Yeah. Like Woody Allen, Tarantino, people like that who just write it so well. And I've watched a couple of his newer ones. I mean, he makes one every year, so he's going to have a lot of hit and misses, and some people just can't pull it off. And the last one, I forget what it was, but it was just a young guy doing a Woody Allen impression. So I was just like, eh. Like, I don't want fake Woody Allen. Like,
right, yeah,
it exactly. It doesn't do it for me. Even if Woody Allen's directing it, I don't want some kid playing Woody Allen. Like,
right.
But Love and Death is great. Like, just enough goofy, just enough philosophical Woody Allen stuff. You know, it's great. Love and Death.
Nice. Awesome. All right, cool. All right, well, that's it, guys. That's episode number 61 done in the books. Devin's back with us this week. We should have, I haven't talked to Jesse yet, but I've been saying that we're going to have our cousin Jesse on, who's an awesome woodworker and craftsman and does some really awesome stuff. And I'll wait to talk about him when we have him on there. But we're hopefully going to have him on next week. So
we keep saying we're going to have guests. We will eventually.
I know we will. We have people lined up. It's just, you know, we keep saying this too. We're so busy right now. Everyone's busy. You know, we'll get them in there. But
I will say October onwards until next March, we'll be opened up. I will not be doing Orioles baseball. So we will all have some time, and we're getting really close to the Maker
Camp.
Blackthorn Maker Camp. So that's exciting.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. All right. So thank you guys all so much for listening. Please make sure you don't forget to head over to YouTube and see our videos there, because that's what this is all about, is us enjoying making stuff and talk to you guys about it, and then, you know, preempting things that we're showing you on YouTube. So go over there and subscribe and like, and, you know, let us know what you think about the videos and comments there. You can go over to Instagram and find us there as well, The Art of Craftsmanship and The Art of Camera Guy, to see Devin's, like, pictures of the Avett brothers at Oriole Stadium. And, and, you know, you can always go and support us as well. Any support is huge. So those of you who do support us on Patreon, we really, really appreciate it. It makes a big difference. And if you don't, that's fine too. We're happy to have you guys listening. I'm actually going to shout out someone real quick before we go, just because he tagged us on Instagram on a post that he put up, and I thought it was cool because it's always interesting to know that there are people out there who are listening to our podcast that we don't know at all. I guess that's the whole point, right? There's lots of people watching our videos, but there's something a little bit more intimate about the podcast. So thank you to, this is his Instagram handle, shed_72. So thank you so much for shouting us out on Instagram. He says he was waterproofing his garage floor with tanking slurry to make another workshop space, and Dustin and Devin were keeping him company on the Art of Craftsmanship podcast.
Nice.
So it's cool. It's like there are people out there who are listening, and and we don't know them, and they know something about us. So if you are that person, thank you so much. And if you are someone else out there, tag us in what you're doing on Instagram. Let us know what you're doing when you listen to us. It's always fun to hear and know, and you know, feel like we're part of that community. So, all right, everybody, thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.